I remember a couple of times, one in 2013 and one in 2014, when I was covering the Blue Jays every day, they had 11-game win streaks in each of those seasons. And baseball, a little different from basketball, they literally do play every day. But being around a team that is on a run like that, you almost get caught up in the vibe when you live it. And you are around that team all of the time. What has the experience been as this winning streak has extended into a realm that I don't think anybody would have predicted?
Yeah, it's interesting because it kind of takes on two lives. Like at first, you know, they're winning some games, and because they were going through so many injuries at that time, you know, it's just everyone's trying to get by it day by day. And even once it's up to six, even seven games, no one's really talking about it. This is a really good team. You'd expect to win six or seven games in a row sometimes. Once it starts at 8-9-10 and the franchise record is kind of in sight, then it almost felt like it was hanging there, right? Like people were aware of the streak, and it was that number 12 that was, you know, that people were reaching for. And it was kind of tied into also, you know, the players were really rallying to try to get the coaching staff to the All-Star game. So that was tied into that as well. But since they hit that, it's almost felt like this freeing thing now where, you know, the pressure's not off because the Eastern Conference standings are still pretty tight and they still need that cushion in the two seed. But the streak itself has become this kind of freeing thing where, you know, there's almost that sense in the room, I think, that not a lot can go wrong right now. And no matter what you can throw at them, they're going to be able to deal with it, including, you know, playing against Carl Anthony Towns with no center. So I think they're in a really, really good spot now mentally. And it's kind of rode those waves as the streak became a stress. And now it's become this big freeing thing.
Carl Anthony Towns is like pretty trash, eh? Would that be your assessment from last game? No, I'm just joking.
Those would not be the words I chose. No.
Okay. So what I was talking about earlier was that he's a very good player, but obviously this franchise hasn't done anything since he's been drafted. I would say it's similar to kind of having Anthony Davis on the Pelicans, where it's like you haven't been able to really drag them out of mediocrity. And I thought that it was a good opportunity for him last night to kind of go off against this Raptors team. And then you can't even post up Fred VanVleet, for example. And I think for those who don't necessarily watch a lot of Timberwolves games, it could have been a bit of a rude awakening if you thought that he was in this upper tier of superstardom.
It's tough because, you know, I think what Towns gets, you know, there are nights where it's absolutely, you can hang it on Towns. And, you know, last night, the offense is one thing, and then you look at the defensive end and it's like, oh yeah, I definitely see where you can put the blame on Towns. You know, last night, a couple new guys on the team, his first game with D'Angelo Russell. Mm-hmm. I get it to an extent. I think sometimes he runs into that balance. And we talked about this with DeRozan when he was coming up and Kawhi Leonard in the clutch last year. You know, there's a difference between making the right play and making what the right play is for a superstar, or what people feel like the right play is for a superstar. So when he is backing down Rondé Hollis-Jefferson and that Pascal Siakam double comes in the middle of the floor, a lot of people want Towns to try to bully his way through that and score at the rim because he does have the size advantage and he is so talented offensively. You know, I think for him, he sees that as an opportunity to kick it out to a teammate and get those guys involved, especially with D'Angelo Russell there now. And I think, you know, he's got a lot of reps under his belt, so he should maybe have it more figured out than he does. But I think he's still trying to figure out that right balance between asserting himself as a scorer and trying to be the fulcrum of the offense. And you've seen these last two games since they made that trade. He's a lot more active as a passer. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, non-verbally trying to get guys to make cuts. He's picking guys off backdoor and stuff. But yeah, I would have expected him to eat a lot more against guys like Rondé Hollis-Jefferson and Fred VanVleet and Chris Boucher on him in the post, for sure.
With Blake Murphy of The Athletic, and just to pick up on your point, Ashley's, Blake, it is a reminder that in professional sports, nothing is guaranteed, right? I mean, just last week, the Timberwolves moved on from Andrew Wiggins. Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins were not able to turn that T-Wolves franchise into a winner. Jimmy Butler was there for a little bit of time as well. And yet here with the Raptors, who have not had really any high draft picks in the last number of years because of the success of the franchise, Pascal Siakam, a lot of the not even necessarily drafted guys, the undrafted but developed guys like Fred VanVleet, there are no guaranteed ways to succeed. And sometimes, as in the Raptors' case, you succeed in more unexpected ways.
For sure. It's kind of ironic that the one guy out of the Raptors' rotation most of this year is the one guy who was a lottery pick in Stanley Johnson. there are a lot of ways to do this stuff. And, you know, Russell and Towns, those guys were high picks because they're immensely talented. And obviously they're immensely talented on the offensive end. There's a lot that Minnesota can do with that and can build around that. But, you know, there are also culture elements. You know, I was in the Timberwolves locker room last night, and they're one of the few teams that travels with a bunch of, you know, branded team gear. And that seems like a silly thing, but they've got these words of affirmation, these culture buzzwords on all of these like carpets in the locker room and stuff like that. And so they're very much a franchise in the process of trying to figure those things out. And how do they build and develop winners? Where you look at a team like the Raptors now in year 7 or 8 of that, and they're the model that other teams are coming for. You know, the Miami Heat talked openly about it when the Raptors visited them early in the year, how they looked at the Raptors' ability to turn G League guys into NBA guys and fringe NBA guys into NBA rotation guys. And teams are trying to figure out what it is the Raptors are doing. You know, they still seem to be ahead of it. You get a guy like Terrence Davis coming in this year undrafted, even a guy like Matt Thomas, who they bring in from overseas and other teams maybe see his limitations. And the Raptors look at guys like that and kind of don't ask what they can't do. They ask what they can do. Right. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, no, he can't provide a lot of spacing, but he's everywhere on defense. But you can get away with playing him as a center on offense because of what his skill set is there. So I think it's that kind of open-mindedness and growth mentality that's kind of defined the Raptors' ability to, you know, find undervalued guys and develop them and find NBA roles for them.
Toronto's moved within 3 wins of the Bucks' streak this year of 18. There's a lot of conversation on how this team does stack up against other top teams from the East. What else can this Raptors team do till people start, I don't want to say taking them serious if they got to go up against the Bucks in a series or in the playoffs, but what else can they do to kind of, persuade people to say, now, we can take down the Bucks.
Yeah, it's tough. I've had a couple of people say to me on Twitter or even in person, you know, well, the Raptors have won 15 straight, but they haven't done it against very good competition. Well, those are the 15 teams they've played. You can only do so much. And I do think they have some quality wins in there. The win at Oklahoma City, beating Philly even without Embiid, the 2 Indiana wins. So I think, you know, the longer this goes on, obviously people take notice. But they have some big games coming up out of the All-Star break as well. They'll see Indiana a third time. And even though Indiana's struggling, it's always difficult to beat a really good team 3 times in a row. And then there's obviously that Bucks showdown coming. So the schedule does have, you know, it's not unfriendly the rest of the way. The Raptors have a league average strength of schedule, but there are going to be some of these extra games against that 1-6 in the East that people are kind of measuring them by. The Raptors struggles in those matchups so far. I think there's something like 4-7 against that group. They're kind of defined by how many guys the Raptors have been missing and how injured they've been. But now you have a 15-game win streak, so you kind of lose that as a qualifier. So I'd say, you know, the longer the win streak goes, the better. But coming out of the All-Star break, when they're going to have Indy again and they're going to have Milwaukee again, and then down the stretch, they're going to have a couple more tests. Those will be the big games that people are keying in on. And you won't extrapolate too much from one game. But, yeah, the game on the 25th against the Bucks projects as a pretty big, you know, they say a measuring stick game. And I don't think they'll overreact to that one performance. But I think people are going to be really curious to see how that matches up.
Despite the fact that this team has suffered through so many injuries, despite the fact that they lost Kawhi Leonard in the offseason, Blake, do you think it's fair to say that this season has been more enjoyable than last? And by what I mean by that is, I felt like last year there were so many expectations on this group just because Masai and Bobby pulled the trigger on the DeMar DeRozan Kawhi Leonard trade. And so it was like, well, it's championship or bust. And that added a sense of pressure and expectation, whereas this year I feel like expectations were definitely a little bit lower, and they've just been able to kind of enjoy playing the game without all these looming questions hanging over them.
Yeah, I think that's fair for sure. Last year, you know, every time they lose 2 games in a row or Kawhi Leonard misses 3 games, you know, it seems like the end of the world because everyone's operating under the understanding that was probably a 1-year window. And then this year, you know, you said they have lower expectations, and that kind of makes this all feel like almost like house money. Mm-hmm. And then there's also that element of, you know, I thought heading into the year that, not to this extent, obviously, but I thought there might be this element of the Raptors have this championship hangover. They get all the benefit of the championship experience and keeping seven rotation guys together. But then they also get to slide back into this kind of prove them role that they've thrived with so much. Like, the Raptors love the whiteboard material of being low in the power rankings and being slept on and things like that. So I think, you know, I think the fan base does better like that than they do being a favorite too. So, you know, all those factors kind of pull the same way. And to do this all through injuries, people should be excited. And you know, my colleague Eric Kareen at The Athletic wrote about it last night that there are, over the course of 82 games, there's a lot of stuff to worry about, and you have to kind of keep the big picture in mind. But you don't get things like a 15-game winning streak through a bunch of injuries with a really fun and kind of likable group of guys very often. So people should lean in and enjoy this. Last year was very special for what it was, but you're right. There was that sort of specter of urgency over everything, and this year's a little more free and I think a little more fun.
With Blake Murphy, Nick Nurse, you go back a decade, he's coaching in Europe, he's coaching in England, he's hoping to land on an NBA bench at some point in his life. And now in the last, 16, 17 months, he's hired as the Raptors head coach. He wins an NBA title, and he is now presiding over one of the top three teams in the NBA in his second season by record. What have you appreciated most about him, Blake, in being so close to the team and observing him and dealing with him over the last year and a half?
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest thing for me is that he's kind of been who he said he was going to be. And that's when you get the job and DeMar DeRozan's been traded away and Dwayne Casey's been let go and the franchise kind of has all this pressure on it. It's one thing to come out and say, oh yeah, we're going to try a bunch of stuff. We're going to play freely. And then it's another when you get in a locker room with Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry and later Marc Gasol, and you're actually trying to get those guys to buy in. And Nurse kind of made a comment pregame last night about how last year he had to slow play bringing the defense along to try to get to kind of reestablish the principles and get the team playing their more basic man-to-man defense the way he wanted. And that caused some frustrations and guys pushed back on that a little bit. But over the long haul, he got that buy-in. And I think it's the same thing with how he rotated the starters last year and how, you know, guys' roles changed over the course of the year. Jonas Valanciunas moving to the bench and then Serge Ibaka moving to the bench. Norman Powell kind of bouncing around roles as he does. And that's carried over into this year. And I think, you know, I think that defines a lot about who Nurse is as a coach, because where he did come from, his time in the G League and things like that. But I also think that that open-mindedness and that flexibility is just a really good attitude to instill on your team. You know, if you're a young developing team, maybe that role certainty is important. And that sense of rigidity kind of helps guys grow within a definition. But with a team like this, when you're as talented and as smart as the Raptors are, I've really appreciated that Nurse has kind of stuck with this agile approach to coaching, where he can throw Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at center, or he can zone a team up for a whole quarter or full court trap for a quarter to try to make a comeback. And, you know, he doesn't worry about things like, oh, Steph Curry's going to call my defense janky or it's going to look really ugly for a quarter. So I've appreciated that openness and him kind of sticking to what he said he was going to be.